75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
We're going to do more about the Wingmakers today. If you were listening on a previous show this week, we had John Burgess, our good friend from New Jersey, down around Atlantic City. He and his wife Darlene discussed the Wingmakers in detail. As you know from previous shows, we've talked to John about the Wingmakers and that phenomenon. And it's a multi-layered affair that I think you'll find very interesting. So I thought we'd go ahead and finish that show today and let you know a little bit more about the Wingmakers program. And really the best way to do it is just feature their show, because really they cover most of the bases, in fact all of them. So let's go ahead without, as they say, further ado. Always like that. Without further ado, here's John and Darlene.
We should probably let you know that the lead-in to part two of the show tonight is an excerpt from Hakomi Chamber 2, and the lead-in to the show at the very beginning tonight was also an excerpt from the same track, Hakomi 2. During our first break tonight, we played an excerpt from Chamber 10 of the Ancient Arrow site, and Chamber 8. At the end of the break, at the end of the last part of the show, we played Ancient Arrow Chamber 8 music. Hello again. We're back from our break, and we're continuing here with the introduction of the various components of the Wingmakers material. And the next thing that's important to mention in terms of the written material is the glossary. There is a glossary of terms that's available. That is an interesting one, in that glossaries are usually in alphabetical order, and this glossary is not. This is presented more in a logical order. It's a thematic order, Darlene is telling me here. That's a good way to think of it. The terms are given in according to, what is an entity? You know, what is the mind? What is the first source? What is God? All these things, but they're sort of in a logical, thematic framework, as opposed to a standard glossary, which is normally given in alphabetical order. The glossary in itself is an entire paper worthy of study. So I think that brings us to the Wingmakers' poetry. The poetry is quite fascinating. We've been studying it in our study group here in our community. We have about 8 to 12 people who are part of our group. We've been meeting for a couple of years now every week. 3 years? It's going on three? Yeah, I think we're entering our third year. Mm-hmm. And we've read the material many times through. We've even read the novel together. And if you can do it, if you have people in your area and you can form a group, you can learn a heck of a lot by sharing these ideas in a group format. So if you can do that, that's great. And if not, well, you have this show at least, and you know you have the forum and whatnot that's associated with the Wingmakers website.
Well, what I found fascinating is that when the optical disc, when they were able to decipher the optical disc, they found two poems for each of the chambers. So since there are 24 chambers, there are 48 poems. And each of the poems they're kind of written in an interesting format in that they really make you think. And he uses phrases that may not seem logical to the logical mind, but then when you really think about it, it does make sense.
Yeah, I think we will definitely read some of these poems eventually on the air and talk about them together and get comments from people for the following show. And I agree, they're very deceiving in the sense of you can read one and it sort of just bounces off of you, and you really need to, I think, learn how to read them. I mean, there's probably a whole skill. I've never been one to read much poetry, but I'm sure there is a skill to reading poetry and delving into its depths. And probably the same applies here, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so, because you learn to read it in terms of not what you normally think, but intuitively you read it. It's more kind of a heart energy kind of thing rather than the brain. And if you read it from the brain, you're going to see one level, and if you read it from heart energy, you'll see it from another level. So it's kind of like levels that you see in the process of reading it.
That's probably so true. I would agree with that. If you read it from a brain logic standpoint, you know, it's not going to do anything for you. But, you know, I wonder if that's true of poetry in general. I don't know. But I think your point is well taken in that with this material, there are certain, I believe, triggers built into the certain lines of these poems that are designed to do something subconsciously, perhaps. I mean, the material is coded in such a way that it's catalytic and it's supposed to be doing something to our DNA. Not something in a radical sense that you're going to notice and have some dramatic alterations in your health or anything like that, but because nothing like that would ever be given out, in my estimation, with all our years of study of these types of things and the caliber of this material, I trust it implicitly. That it's going to be a gentle uplifting of the physiognomy, the physiological body and the psychological bodies that we have. So the poetry we've noticed before we leave the topic, there are two. And one, they're almost like yin and yang in some respects, generally speaking. One poem may be very abstract and philosophical and universal in its content. And the other one associated with that particular chamber will be more personal, almost like a lover to loved, the love type of thing, like a love poem or a lament. But they're usually on a very personal level. And they seem to go back and forth like that. You know, I'm saying generally speaking because I don't think you can nail them down, each and every one of them. Like, you know, Chamber 4 is not, oh, well, this is very personal and that's very abstract. And I just use Chamber 4 as an example. Anything more about the poems before we move to the next part of our discussion here? No?
I think that covers the poetry very well.
Okay, well, I think we should go to talk about the music, because the music is, of all things, probably the most powerful component of the entire presentation of all these materials. As you mentioned earlier, the most important thing, I believe, is that the universality of music and the rhythms and all the things that can be communicated through sound without having to worry too much about language or culture. I mean, I think we have enough of a global culture right now on this planet that music can pretty much be composed that will appeal to everyone's ear in general, again, generally speaking. And this music is very special. There have been 24 compositions that are related to the ancient Aro site. And here's where things get kind of interesting. As we mentioned when we talked about the story, Dr. Neruda has to find 7 sites that were left on our planet by the Wingmakers. And each one's on a different continent. And the music of chambers 1 to 24 is associated with the site in New Mexico. And by the way, that site has to do with genetics, with DNA. Now, music was released in November 2002, I believe. I think around when the fourth interview was released. I think the first Hakomi CD was released. Hakomi, and it was chambers 1 and 2. And we've learned subsequently through the release of information by James, the man who's composing all this material, music, written, graphical, the entire thing, that there will be 17 musical compositions of Hakomi. Now, to date, we're up to 3 CDs for Hakomi, Chambers 1 and 2, a separate CD with Hakomi 3, which is a wonderful composition. It's like, I think, 74, 75 minutes of one track containing many varied types of themes, rhythms. It's very interesting. Interesting voices in the background, and you have to hear it to understand what I'm trying to
verbalize
here, and not too well. And then the latest Hakomi music is Chambers 4, 5, and 6, and that was released about a year ago in October. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing with the music, and of course the latest, before I forget, there's music that's been released lately. I think it was in this past April?
Yes.
April or the spring, middle, early spring, Grand Portal, music by Lyricus. Called The Grand Portal. Again, beautiful stuff. Very, very nice.
That you can hear part of that on the Lyrica site. That's played during the reading of the discourses. But it doesn't have the whole piece. And those of us who wanted the whole piece, he created the CD for. So you could hear the whole piece from beginning to end and not just chopped up and as it has to fit on the technology of the computers.
Yeah, what you mean by that, obviously, is that people wanted the entire thing, and so it was released as a complete CD.
Right.
It wasn't just,
right.
Select people, but it
right,
was
right.
Everyone.
Yeah, everyone.
Yeah, that was made available. And so when you go to the lyricus.org, lyricus.org website, and you click on the different screens, you'll start hearing music playing, and that is the music we're talking about. Now, one of the most interesting things about the music that was released, of two of the Hakomi CDs, Hakomi 3 and Hakomi 4 to 6, two essays were written that went along with those CDs, and it was very interesting. Hakomi 3, the paper that was released for that was called Anatomy of the Individuated Consciousness, which is an essay that explains the various components of our humanity, of who we are, what comprises us as human beings. And we won't go into all that here today, but there are at least six different components of ourselves. And the music that comes with Hakomi 3 is designed to awaken something called the remnant imprint, which is the part of us that it's sort of like our higher inspirational part of ourselves that is embedded in our in our conscious mind and in our body that inspires us to new things, and it's designed to stimulate that. Then Hakomi 4-6, when that was released, there was an essay released on the website called Coherence of the Evolutionary Consciousness. And this was quite fascinating because in this essay, James begins discussing the power of sound, the esoteric use of sound, and how sound can be used as a way of cleaning up the emotions and inspiring us or doing different things. And so that, again, is another whole dimension to the music. And the music is supposed to contain something called an entity that doesn't really have anything to do with something you could hear with your ears, but it's something beyond the physical plane, perhaps.
Could be a energy form.
It's an energy form that's sculpted or created in some mysterious way that we don't understand. That whenever you play any track of the lyric of the Wingmaker's music, doesn't have to be Hakomi, it could be the Ancient Arrow, Grand Portal, that there's an entity accompanying that soundtrack that has the effect, has an effect on our DNA.
Right.
We don't have time to go into it in detail today, but we will probably be covering these things in the future. If anyone is curious about it, they can read about the music on the Lyricus website, and it tells a little bit about that process.
Well, that makes a good introduction into the Lyricus site, because that covers most of what's on the Wingmaker site.
Let's see, the DVD. I guess we should mention a little bit about that.
Yeah,
the DVD is a quite interesting thing. It contains, it's called Meditations in Time Space, and I think there are three tracks on it that are music compositions accompanied by imagery and poetry. And so you're reading a poem associated with music, and it's designed to, again, awaken or be a catalyst to take you into deeper levels of your consciousness. The first video on the DVD is very fascinating. It's a depiction of what are called tributary zones, or a tributary zone. And again, this is a whole part of the Wingmakers we haven't discussed at all today, but a tributary zone, as we understand it, is an actual learning center. It's almost like a repository of knowledge and wisdom created by the Wingmakers that are very large structures in space. And they're usually put in from what we know from our reading, these structures are found at the heart of a galaxy, behind all the high energy
walls,
clouds, black holes that surround a galactic core. And I don't know how else to explain these things except that people can travel to these places out of body. When you sleep at night or in deep meditation, you may actually, part of your consciousness may transfer to a tributary zone, one of these places, where you will learn something. But you never remember being in a tributary zone. So this sort of cancels out for the people that may be a bit skeptical at this point on this particular topic. It kind of cancels out any proof that you've been to a tributary zone. So, but the point is, somehow this works, and these places, according to the Wingmakers, are real, and we go there in our sleep. Certain people go to these places and are inspired, and the best of my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, Darlene, I believe what you bring back from a tributary zone is not something that you would...
It's not personal.
It's not something related to your personal life. Like, you're not going to go to a tributary zone to see how to get rich overnight or to win in the stock market.
It's something to bring back for humanity.
Exactly. Yeah. It's of service to humanity. It's some way to contribute to our planet's civilization and our culture and our our advance as a people. That's why you would go to a tributary zone, be inspired, bring something back, and have a thought related to that
later on
triggered in your mind. And in one of the Q&As that are on the website, there's a discussion about Einstein as being one example of someone who was taken to these tributary zones. So, but the DVD, though, it's accompanied by Chamber 18 music, and it's just a wonderful example,
a visual
of
what this might be if you could remember it.
Exactly, yeah. So, part of that material was commissioned by James, and an artist did that. And geez, I feel I don't remember.
Goya.
Who?
Goya.
Goa, I think is the name. I'm sorry, it's Goa. He's an artist, and I think he does sculpting. At least I think that's something he does. But he did some of the work. He did all the work on the video. Did a great job. All right, why don't we move forward to is it the questions and answers that are important, I think, to talk about here on our list?
I think you start with the creator and then questions and answers.
Yeah.
Who created it?
Well, the creator, when you go to the website, you'll see a section that says creator. It's one of the links on the right side of the Wingmakers homepage. And there's a small writing there by James. And James is the creator or translator of all these materials. And he has the task of stepping down from these tributary zones, the catalytic teachings of the Wingmakers. Those materials, the poetry, the graphics, the music, that will spur us and inspire us to discover our own souls. I've written recently that to me, the Wingmakers, all these materials we're talking about here, are a language in and of themselves. That it's pointed out in one of the discourses that language is not made up of words alone, but language can be music and it could be visual. And that, I believe, is maybe an interesting description of what the Wingmakers materials are. It's a language that's communicating something of great importance about who we are, where we came from, and what our destiny is. Now, the creator section leads into the questions and answers.
Right.
And there were three sessions. And what they are the first two are questions asked by members of the Wingmakers Forum. Mm-hmm. All three of them. Okay. There are other personal questions that are mixed into the third session
right.
that were asked by various students
right.
That were not part of the forum.
Right.
So, but for all practical reasons, there are questions asked by students. And James took quite a bit of time to, I would think, very comprehensively answer all the questions he was sort of allowed to answer, or at this point in our evolution and in the evolution of the Wingmakers material. They are very, I'm starting to sound like a broken record here. Everything I say is very fascinating. It's all very fascinating. But in effect, it really is. And these questions and answers are very important in giving people out there the background, a little bit of the background of, well, where did this information come from and why is it being created and who is the creator? Well, James says that he is a member of a group called the Lyricus Teaching Order, and that even though he's human and living in a body here, he is actually a human in a whole other dimension that would be considered our future. So in a sense, when he says he is a time-shifted, it isn't that he's coming from the future. It's that he represents what we are going to evolve into in the future. So he is like a forerunner of what we are going to become. And this adds more and more intrigue, controversy, excitement, mystique to this entire presentation of information that we find on the internet right now, the Wingmakers website. And
well, this is his last paragraph to a letter that he wrote about the Creator.
All right, this is...
from James.
And this is... Okay.
On the website.
All right.
He says, I am here to help in this discovery, which is the soul. If you apply these materials to your life, you are as well. The principles of love remain constant, but you will find that the presence of love in these teachers less explicit because these materials are concentrated on the discovery of the wholeness navigator, which is the soul.
Okay.
And so what you're going to be looking for, you're going to be seeing that these are here to help us find that one mission, finding our soul.
And they're not here to do it for us. They're here to help us do it ourselves.
Their mission is to guide us to that point, like giving us help to find what is the soul. And sort of what I envision, if I could see, envision it for people, it would be like, just like we took the genome project and we found all the chromosomes. We haven't found all the genes yet, but found all the chromosomes, and we know a lot about how we construct a human body. It's going to be the same thing. We're going to now know how we construct and what is the function of the soul within the DNA of a human body.
So maybe that's what that essay means, the anatomy of the individuated consciousness. It's talking about the inner... There are components or parts of us, just like we have components in our physical body. What you're saying,
right,
I believe, are that we have these organs, psychological organs,
right,
that compose our higher bodies.
Which are part of a system, because you go from cells to tissues to organs to the system.
Mm.
So it goes the same thing in our other bodies as well.
Yes, and there was a point I was just going to bring up about that, that, it escaped me, about that whole aspect of, even talking about psychological organs, one might think of the chakra system that comes from Eastern philosophy. That is mentioned in the material, but not a lot. In fact, the anatomy of the individuated consciousness, those components are not about the chakra system. They're about something totally different that we've never known about. So that in itself is quite intriguing, you know? Okay, maybe we can move on now to information about Lyricus. Is that where we are in today's show?
Yep. Sounds good.
Well, I think one of the biggest, most exciting surprises in all of this was at the beginning of this year, 2004, an entirely new website came online called Lyricus.org. And it kind of blew everybody away who was familiar with Wingmakers itself, because it extended... I guess that's a good way to say it. It extended and expanded the context in which the Wingmakers material itself is placed. You could go to the Wingmakers website and say, well, where did all this come from? What is it all about? It would be really hard to get a handle on that because you're reading a novel and you're reading these interviews and you're trying to figure out, well, is this true or isn't it true? You know, what is it all about? And in the questions and answers that have been given since, I guess, May of 2001, I think that's when the first set came out, very slowly James began to reveal the fact that he was not just a normal human being, first of all, but that he was a special human being, and that only in the sense of that he is more advanced than we are because of his evolutionary development, and that he had come to this planet to translate these materials to help us. Now, okay, that's all well and good. So is this some isolated individual just sort of floating through the universe, visiting planets to do this? Well, no, because soon after that, he began to reveal the fact that he was a member of an entire teaching order that does this. A vast and ancient teaching order that works with humanity wherever it's found in the universe. And it's called the Lyricus Teaching Order. And it's one of the most esoteric or secret orders in the universe. Secret in the sense that it keeps itself hidden from view so that it does not influence the cultures that it's visiting and helping. It stays behind the scenes. It stays behind the scenes for a very long time so as not to overly influence or, overly nurture the race that it's serving on a given planet. So it stays behind the scenes until that population reaches a certain point in its development and its evolution where it becomes more mature enough to handle the idea that there are more advanced beings who created us and are here to help us go to the next level. So it's all a question of maturity. Secrecy in order to protect, not secrecy in order to take advantage of. And that's where at least I am in my belief in this material. Others may differ on that, but not me. So, darling, what do we have here that you might want to talk about in this regard, in this list?
Well, I think you might want to talk about the book Liminal Cosmogony. But that's some of the information that's going to be presented over the time. That's a book on cosmology.
Yes, thank you. Very true. The in the Wingmakers material itself, there are mentions in the novel, and I believe in the interviews. I'm not sure, but I know in the novel, Dr. Neruda is talking about the Cordium, that the Cordium have this book. It's like their Bible called Liminal Cosmogony. And liminal means on the edge. And cosmogony has to do with origins. Where do you come from? So these are like, it's kind of hard to put that into a phrase.
On the edge where you come from.
On the edge of where you come from. It's like, I think it's sort of the limit of knowledge as to our origins. Maybe we could term it like that. This book goes to the very limit of knowledge, up to date, all the time. It's always pushing on the edge of the origins of life, especially human life in the universe. And in the novel, the Cordium have this book. And for the longest time in our groups, we would think, wow, wouldn't it be cool if there really was a book like this? And then through the questions and answers process, James began to be a little more explicit about this and say, well, guess what? There is a book like this called Liminal Cosmogony.
And we all wanted it.
And, of course, we all want a copy. So I went on Amazon right away, and I started looking for Liminal Cosmogony. I just couldn't find it anywhere. So
hasn't been translated
yet. Just kidding. Then maybe someday it'll be on Amazon or at Borders or some Barnes & Noble. So when Lyricus came online, there was this article called Excerpts from Liminal Cosmogony. It's about 11 pages long, and it is a very comprehensive overview about the Grand Portal.
The whole mission of Lyricus' teaching.
It's sort of in a nutshell about the mission of the Lyricus' teaching order in shepherding humanity to the Grand Portal. Maybe that's the best way to put it.
That's very
and
good.
I think we're probably going to read this document and discuss it on future shows because it's very good. And then there are also FAQs or answers and questions on the website. And these are like just like someone asking a question and getting an answer. And they go into more detail about the particular details. I guess I'm sort of repeating myself here, but they're very comprehensive and they go into much more detail about different issues people might have and questions they might have. These frequently asked questions about the entire Lyricus initiative here. We're also told on the website itself that more information is going to be gradually added to the Lyricus website as time goes along. And like I said at the beginning, this is like a major addition to the entire process that's going on here. And that leaves us with something that we absolutely must mention before we end the show, and that are the Lyricus discourses.
Yes, they're very important, and we've had them for a little while. They are cover many subjects, and they cover mostly subjects of our soul and experiencing the wholeness navigator, calling forth the wholeness navigator, the nature of knowledge, universe relationship, the interface zone, and then the intuitive techniques.
Yeah, techniques of the intuitive intelligence is the latest one,
right.
Number six.
Right.
So there are six of these out, and every one of them are free to download at the Lyricus website.
And the one thing I would say about this is that it's a dialogue, like Plato used in a sense, a dialogue between a teacher and student. And one of the things that you end up doing is reading it out loud to yourself. And in the process of doing that, you really connect to the inner voice, or your original voice, as he calls it, that most of us, because we don't read out loud to ourselves, we never get in touch with. So it's a technique in how to get in touch with your original voice. The other thing that's also interesting is that if you play the grand portal music behind it, you really get a real sense of the feel of it.
Yes, in fact, I think that's very important to play that music. I mean, none of this is, you have to.
Yeah, that's what's really great about it.
Yeah, we don't want it to sound that way, but it is suggested that you play the grand portal music while you're reading a Lyricus discourse. And in fact, I didn't mention that in regard to this, and I'll get back to this, though, in a second, but a little side note. At our meetings locally, we started reading the poems together, and we play music at the beginning, and we do a very short like mind body movement before we start, and sometimes I'll leave music playing while we begin reading. So one night in particular, I think I had some grand portal music in the background, and we started reading one of the chamber poems. And so we're reading it, and we each take a stanza, and we go around the room, and we read it to ourselves and then out loud. And it was like no one was connecting at all, and it was like we were just bouncing off of this thing. And all of a sudden I realized, I said, oh, you know what, I'm not playing the music that goes with this poem. So immediately, I think we were reading the Chamber 2 poem, for instance, and I put on Chamber 2 music, and within about 10 minutes at the most, people were beginning to penetrate more deeply into the meaning, or what they thought the meaning of the poem was, and really began to get into it. So there is an interesting connection between the music and the poetry, at least. So
if that's true, then there's probably a very strong relationship, because on the website, the music you can play different, because it has at the top 1 through 3, 4, 5, 6, 6. So you can use click on make it a 6 and read discourse
part 6,
etc. So you can play each one for each of the discourse, and it really is an interesting experience.
Yeah, and that'll repeat. It'll just
keep going to get
loop
through the whole discourse.
Exactly. Now, the fact that we have the entire CD, Grand Portal, I believe you could just put the CD in and let it play to its heart's content and read any of these also. But these discourses are, I would characterize them as being deceptively simple at times. When you first read one, it seems like, oh, okay, well, I kind of already know this. And as the student is asking the teacher questions, you know, the student seems to be asking questions that you would ordinarily logically ask. And some of the disconcerting parts of it are that the student will ask a question and the teacher will maybe ask that student a question back, or sort of just bring up a story, a metaphor. And so it's like not a direct answer. It's something you have to think about. And I think probably for many of us in this fast age that we live in are not used to having to sit down and penetrate into the meaning of something when we read it. We're very used to, you know, television and our computers.
Instamatic.
Instamatic, like, instantaneous information about, oh, well, that's that, and then we go to the next topic.
Sound bites.
So there is a requirement here to read these over and over again. And I think it said, didn't it, that it's recommended you read one of these each month, or how did that work?
No, it's recommended that you read them all 12 times once a month.
So all six of these you try to read in 1 month.
Right.
Exactly.
But then you repeat that for a whole year.
Yeah. Now, what happens if he keeps adding them? We're going to have to keep reading more and more? Like, what if it gets up to, like, 12 of them? We have to read 12 a month?
Then it's writing a question
all right. Write a question to James and see if he tells us. But
and he'll say, do what you feel.
Do what you feel is right. And I think that you're saying something that's kind of true, is that, you know, there are general procedures that should be followed with this material. You know, I believe that. In fact, one of the latest exercises in a Lyricist discourse recommends that you do this exercise at least 30 days in a row, at a minimum, before it will have any effect on you. So, see, there are rules. There's a wise teacher we've both studied who said that rules are tried and tested methods that have been applied and have been found to be successful through many years of experience, and therefore they become rules. Not because you have to follow them or you'll be punished, but because people have found that when they follow those rules, they're more successful. And that's what I would recommend with this material. You may want to tailor the way you do an exercise, do it a little differently, and you'll probably get good results. But there still need to be some persistence and patience and effort put into the study of these things. And that definitely applies to the Lyricist discourses. So, is there anything else we need to talk about? Maybe people often ask, where do you begin with this material? I know that's a question that we get a lot when people either write to us or we're at a meeting. And I know it is a problem by just the way people, they say, well, geez, you know, I went to the website and I didn't know what to read first. I didn't know what to do. And the other day I was thinking about this, and I wrote a little, very short article about it. And in general, it suddenly hit me that it isn't just a matter of what is logically the correct thing to read first in the material. What I think is people really have to get in touch with what is it that's attracted them in the material. What is it that makes them feel good? And I don't mean like feel good like, oh, wow, this is a whole lot of fun. I mean, that could be part of it. But what is it that really speaks to you? Is it the poetry? Is it the music? Is it the philosophy? I mean, we've met people that just love the philosophy and they can't get into the music. We've met people that just love the paintings and they don't like the poetry. They're all different. There are people that love it all and there are people that hate every bit of it and think it's worthless. But I think the point is to follow your heart. Let your heart lead you into the place you need to go. And I think the Windmaker's material is difficult to immerse yourself in from the standpoint of logic and reasoning alone.
You can't use the brain alone.
Exactly. You need, the heart needs to lead the way, I believe. Mm-hmm. Once the heart has led you, and the Windmaker's has many entrance points. It's like a sphere in space with many entrance points, and your heart will lead you through the doorway you need to go through to access it. And then after that, your brain, your reason, your logic, your memory, your knowledge, your experience can enter in and work with that good feeling to take you to the next step in the new direction within the material, or not, or lead you out of it. So I think I wrote here, I don't know if I'm going to reconstruct this exactly, but Windmaker's is not a corridor in which there's information hanging on the walls, and you go in the entranceway and you walk through the straight corridor to the exit, and you look at what's on the wall, and you go out the other end and say, oh, now I know about Windmaker's, what's next? No, it isn't like that. You know, Windmaker's is an ever-expanding multimedia presentation of universal truth. Therefore, it's not really linked to time and space. It's coming from outside time and space, entering the time-space dimension where we are. So we have to work with it with our human mechanism, our brain. And so therefore, it doesn't seem very logical at all sometimes. And yet, other people say, this is so true to me, but I don't know why. I can't explain it. Because that's when you're really feeling it with your heart. And that's when you know you can trust it and move forward with it. So I would say for people, you know, begin with the part that you've begun with. When you go to the site, what attracts you at the Wingmaker site, enjoy that, you know, get into it. Then if you, ease in and you have more questions, you know, questions will come from the brain. and feel your way
and
through it at that
heart,
level.
And the heart will answer them if you listen to it.
If you listen. Yeah, it's a matter of being quiet, huh, listening to it. So for today, I mean, I think that would be my advice on it, that we'll have more to say about that as we go along. But that's how I feel, you know, personally about it.
You can enter from any point, because the point is what attracts you as attracted you via what your activation source to be activated at this time is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, we've been pre-programmed, according to this, to be triggered by the material that's now being presented to us. As wild and crazy as that might sound to some of the people out there, that is the claim, that we were created with DNA triggers that are waiting in dormancy for a catalyst to come along and turn on those circuits and start the flow. And everyone's circuit is set up a little bit differently, but the material itself is designed to turn on some of those in the order they need it for each individual. Maybe that's another way to at least...
That's a good way of saying it.
Explain it or rationalize it.
So goodbye for now.
So, yeah, say goodbye to now.
Say goodbye to now.
Well, it's been a pleasure presenting this first show here today, and we hope we haven't goofed up too much or sounded too crazy, but we feel good about the show, and we're hoping that this helps people and begins to connect us all. So until next time, this is John saying good day.
Darling saying enjoy.
Until next time, we thank you for sharing the journey with us today. And remember, you are forever connected to your brothers and sisters of all time and space.
If you've missed some of the Wingmakers programs, we do have them on our website under the picture of John Burgess on our UFO expert gallery there, the gallery of UFO experts, researchers, and people who have had experiences on our UFO files section at jerrypippin.com. Just click on the Burgess section and those shows are posted. The Wingmakers, a very interesting phenomenon for sure. We're on our way to Las Vegas, Nevada, where we'll be at the second annual Crash Retrieval Conference. And in a moment, we're going to replay an interview we did with Ryan S. Wood, in which he gives out the lineup of what is happening this weekend. It's very interesting. Got an email from Bill Hamilton. And we've done several shows with Bill Hamilton. Remember the J-Rod programs, the living entity at Area 51. In fact, we have that on our website on demand as well. While you're over there clicking on the John Burgess interviews, you can click on Bill Hamilton's picture and do the same thing. We'll be visiting with Bill on Saturday afternoon, right after he has lunch with Linda Moulton Howe. And Linda's promised she'll drop by the studio as well. We'll be making tapes for lots of shows in the near future from the second annual Crash Retrieval Conference. But right now, let's talk to Ryan S. Wood. Find out from Ryan exactly what we have scheduled here. I think you'll find it a very interesting conference. Still time to make your reservation and go enjoy yourself.
Brett, I'm excited about our speakers and the conference in general. We had a great send-off conference last year and had over 200 people attended, and we expect to do about 300 this year.
Yeah, and of course it's at Sunset Station, same place you had it last year there in East Las Vegas or right next to Henderson, whatever. It's a nice facility.
Yeah, it is. It's a quality three-star hotel and casino. The rooms are reserved at $89 a night, and the conference is $159, and all the associated details of logistics and speakers and so forth, which we'll talk about, are on the website ufoconference.com.
Yeah, we have a link to that from our website at jerrypippin.com as well for our radio listeners in case they don't remember it, and we'll give it again here in a minute. For people to write it down, it's pretty easy to remember, ufoconference.com.
It is. I was amazed that I was able to get that, and nobody had it already.
And that's one of the secrets of the Internet, and sometimes you think things are obvious, and if you don't try, you never know.
That's right.
I'm going to run down these speakers with you here in a minute, but I you've got an interesting topic that I'm looking forward to hearing, and that's the untimely deaths of UFO researchers.
Yeah, it is a very interesting, and the linkages or connections to UFOs. And I've been working on a database of people in the United Kingdom that have met with ill fate and mysteriously in some cases and obvious suicides and murders in others, from the well-known such as JFK or RFK or Oppenheimer or Dorothy Kilgallen. Or Marilyn Monroe, to the obscure bacteriologists and virologists at University of Minnesota, Porter and Galding, and other people in the UK, Malcolm Putty and Christopher McAdams. So it's a very interesting collection of people. The core criteria we're using is that you have to have credibility and stature by yourself, and then been interested and involved in the UFO field, and potentially be somehow threatening or a loose cannon to the powers that be, such that they might consider killing you for doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, in other words, to keep the secrets.
Right, right.
Basically, like I say, we'll look forward to talking to you in more detail about that later. That's going to be interesting in the conference. I notice you have Nick Redfern from Australia lined up.
Yeah, well, Nick's actually from the UK.
Okay, the UK.
But he lives in Texas now. He's transplanted and is in the process of becoming a citizen. Nick's written three books on UFOs, one on the FBI, one on cosmic crashes in the UK. And so he's a very talented researcher. His forte is research. And he does a great job.
He's going to have some a presentation with lots of illustrations, I understand.
That's true, and he's going to kick it all off and review the top 25 crash retrievals of all time. And most people think, well, there's Roswell, and that's it.
Yeah, throw three or four more of 25. That's amazing.
Right, well, and then I might even go further, is that my father, Dr. Robert M. Wood, is going to be talking about the Leo Stringfield material. He's written four or five status reports on crash retrievals and several papers. He passed away, I think, like 10 years ago. But by copiously analyzing all of his material, there's some 80 crash identified.
Wow. You know, I talked to you briefly before we went on the air about, a report of a possible UFO crash in Ohio or two, and one radio station had a story about it, but not much else I've been able to find out. So these things are actually still happening.
Yeah, that is noteworthy. I mean, I appreciate that, and I was not aware of that. And I sure hope that there's some MUFON investigators and some active UFO investigators searching and digging into details of that to conclude one way or the other what happened.
Yeah, you never know. But 80, that's a big number. I'd not realized that.
Yeah, it was a big number when I was talking to him on the phone. And there'll be the date, the location, the description, the number of alien bodies, and so forth. It's pretty overwhelming, you know, even if you realize that probably half of them are junk or they're inadequate or you got to throw them out.
Right, even if you got, 10%.
It only takes one.
you're talking about Nick Redfern being in Texas now. You got another famous Texas researcher lined up there, I notice.
Yeah, Jim Mars.
Yeah.
My challenge with Jim Mars is to try to contain him to just talking about this Aurora crash in 1897. Because he's such a talented guy and is so familiar with all sorts of tangential issues of how the government works and secrecy and 9/11 Commission and on, and has written multiple books, including a powerful book, sort of compendium of UFO facts, almost an encyclopedia-like doc.
Yeah, he's quite a guy, and I've talked to him briefly about that incident. Evidently, it was even in the papers back here.
It was in the papers, and there was a small alien creature that was allegedly buried, given proper burial in the cemetery. Jim happens to know precisely where that headstone was at the time because he looked at this 30, 40 years ago. Headstone has all been moved, and he's done quite a bit of research on that particular event, and it's right in his backyard in Texas there. And that's the earliest known crash that I'm aware of with bodies that's credible.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Don Ledger, who you have talking about that Snug Harbor incident, that's up in Canada, right?
Right.
I believe Don used to work for Canadian Broadcasting at one time.
Yes, I really don't know much about it or haven't read that much about it. And I'm looking forward to hearing Don's talk and investigation about it. My understanding is that the craft sort of came down, hovered, went into the lake, and then the Navy divers came in and couldn't find anything, and then the craft moved underwater away to a new location, and then the Navy divers came in and found all sorts of stuff.
That'll be an interesting thing. Peter Robbins was there last year, and he's coming back, huh?
Yeah, he's coming back. I mean, he did a special last year on the James Forrestal murder, and that sparked me to do a review of all the sort of murders that are linked to UFO activity. But he's got some new information and fresh perspective on the Brent Waters Woodbridge UFO incident. So I look forward to getting your listeners there and having a wonderful time.
Okay, and we'll see you at the conference.
Great. Thanks, Jerry.
For sure, that will be a very interesting conference this weekend at Sunset Station in Las Vegas, Nevada. At the Sunset Station Hotel and Casino, Ryan S. Wood there telling us all about it. Our time is up. I'd like to thank John and Darlene Burgess for their input with the Wingmakers program and Ryan S. Wood for taking time to talk to us about the upcoming conference. And we'd like to thank our executive producer, Larry Dickin, the top dog doing the production today, seeing how the rest of us feel. Anyway, thanks, Larry. You did a good job. Until tomorrow, cheers.